dear listener, to Anarcho Book Club. So today we're finally going to get to Song of Myself by Walt Whitman. I know I've been saying, I think it's probably been 3 or 4 weeks since we started Whitman, but finally we're getting to his the kind of pinnacle work, the work that you study in college, sometimes in high school, the work that has been featured in movies such as Dead Poets Society. But today we're finally going to cover it. Now, I don't intend for this episode to be an all-encompassing review, so to speak, of Song of Myself. And that's really not my style anyway. That's really not the style of this whole podcast, in fact. In fact, so far, we have studied anarchists, and we've gleaned nuggets of wisdom from each book or essay we have read. And Whitman, though I don't think he was really an anarchist in the sense that he proclaimed alongside of Emma Goldman his denouncement of government, but rather he was sort of a spiritualist, as we've seen in Leaves of Grass and as we have really honed in on in Song of Myself. And Song of Myself, it's one of my favorite poems in all of literature, because it really, at the time of my life that it was introduced to me in college, I had begun exploring nature more, hiking, climbing mountains, and so on, a lot more than than I do now, and more especially than I ever did before. And so Song of Myself kind of embodies the, you can probably hear my cats behind me here. I rent office space from my cats, and they make sure to disrupt everything that I do at all times, especially the young one. So anyway, back to what we were talking. So I spent much of my early life indoors. Well, unless I was working out of doors. But in college, I really kind of found the appreciation for nature and life and meaning, I think as many, many college students do. And that's also when I was introduced to Song of Myself and Leaves of Grass and Civil Disobedience and so on and so forth. I was introduced to it and I read it and it truly sang to my soul. Because you read through it and you read, oh, let me get to the top here. I've still got it opened up from whenever I read through it a few days ago. Again, I celebrate myself and sing myself, and what I assume you shall assume, for every atom belonging to me as good belongs to you. I loaf and invite my soul, I lean and loaf at my ease, observing a spear of summer grass. And that right there, encapsulates, I think, the entire poem, the entirety of Leaves of Grass. Just these, what was it, four short lines, four, well, they're not lines, but four short phrases encompass the whole thing. He talks about summer grass, a spear of summer grass, and which really connects you to nature. It really draws you into this idea of what would you call oneness, perhaps? That's not exactly right, but oneness with nature, or incorporation with nature, to use a dirty word. Your body, because you are nature, you see. You, my dear, dear listener, you are part of nature. In what you assume, so does the nature around you also assume. Meaning, what you become, things around you will change to become like you, or they'll be cast off. And as Whitman says in the very opening line, I celebrate myself and I sing myself. It means he's come to understand himself. He's introspective. And this is, and if you wonder what this has to do with anarchism, I firmly believe that this has everything to do with anarchism. Because anarchism is not, as we learned in the very first episode of this podcast, anarchism is not what you see it portrayed as on TV or in books. Not generally speaking, that is. It is not this black-masked vigilante running out into the streets with a Molotov cocktail. Now, it could be. In certain instances, it could be. And that's a whole nother thing. But the true core of anarchism, to me, and from my understanding, and from what I've gleaned from even Kropotkin and Proudhon and all of them, what I've still gleaned is anarchism is about humanity. It is, say you're sitting there listening to this, and you say to yourself, I strongly believe that we have, our primary goal as humans is to preserve the environment around us. It is to keep corporations or keep other humans from destroying the environment that we enjoy so much. That is an anarchist ideal. And why is it anarchist? Because it is a human ideal. In my mind, a human and an anarchist are one and the same. An individual and an anarchist. That's a repetition of a phrase. That is the same thing. And anarchism is not this deep, dark evil. It's not something where, that kid's an anarchist, his parents must have messed up somewhere. It's not that. That may be part of it. That may be part of the path. Because we're all on a path, you see. We're all individuals, and we unite together to work towards a common goal, perhaps. But in the end, we're still all individuals. We each have our own mind. We each must celebrate ourselves and sing of ourselves. And that is not to stand on a hilltop and yell to the world how great you are. No, you celebrate yourself by identifying that which is good within you. And then you sing of it. That doesn't mean you sing of it to your friends or what have you. You sing of it to yourself. You sing of that which is good within you. That individuality that is good within you. And you tell yourself, you meditate upon that within your own mind. And for every atom belonging to me as good belongs to you. In that he Whitman encompasses the ideal or the idea that which makes up my being, it comes from food and drink. This is on one level. It comes from food and drink, so water and bread, you might say. And these are things we all must have. These are things we all must consume to exist. We almost breathe. Later he talks about the atmosphere and how it is a perfume that has no smell. This is him, and this is while he is in this poem out by a river or a creek. Have you ever been there? This is all connected to the idea for every atom belongs to me as good belongs to you. Have you ever been there? Have you ever been out in the middle of the woods or in the middle of the wilderness, somewhere out away from everything else? All that is there is you. You and the river, the trees that sway, the bees that float through the air. Maybe there's a deer off in the distance, or there's some squirrels chattering in the trees. All of these things, have you ever been there? Have you ever been there? And for some reason, and I've experienced this, and I'll tell you when in a moment. But there's something about it. It fills you with this invisible, it's exactly how he describes it, a perfume. It's like a joy that you can almost taste. You can almost smell it. And that is being an anarchist. Because being an anarchist is being a human being. It's being an individual who seeks something identified by the early anarchists as mutual aid. It is being a human who seeks relationships with other humans. And the plight of the anarchist is not destruction and chaos for the sake of destruction and chaos. No. The plight of the anarchist is, stop holding me down. Stop using your power over me to keep me in chains to you. And so, well, here, I'll give you a little story. And this is a story that took place shortly after I read Song of Myself by Whitman. Me and two friends, we went hiking in the Appalachian Mountains, the Smoky Mountains to be exact. And it was a 3-day hike? It was supposed to be 5, but, things happened. And it was grueling, I'll tell you. I had been training all summer, hiking in the ravines near where I live, or lived at the time. And it was grueling still, because a ravine is nothing like a mountain. You climb down the ravine, and then you climb out of it, and maybe, yes, that's a 45-minute trek, and you're constantly struggling against gravity, but it's not really the same thing. I climbed up with my two friends, and it was a steady climb up a mountain, because it's the Smoky Mountains. There are no real sharp peaks to speak of, no real climbing. There was some, but not much. It's mostly walking up a trail. But at one point on this trail, we came to a mountain called Thunderhead Mountain, and we were walking up, and at one point it became so tedious that we were literally climbing on almost hands and knees up this mountain. And the whole time, I had no intention of stopping. My goal, my aim was at the top of the mountain. Even though, I'll tell you what, I remember it never felt like it was going to, I was never going to make it. Because every time you came to the top of a climb, it seemed like there was yet another one ahead. And that felt like it lasted for hours upon hours, but really it only lasted maybe an hour and a half of a climb. But finally we came up. I can remember it as clear as day, because it is one of those moments in my life that impressed upon me this thing that Whitman speaks of, the fragrant, well, the air with no smell, the atmosphere. It has a fragrance that is beyond the senses. And that is, we came up onto a knoll. It was just short of the peak, I remember. And it's these are called the Smoky Mountains for a reason, because we came up there and there was a thick fog. You could see through the fog. I still have a picture of it. I had a camera at the time that I brought with me. And you could see through the fog, but it was still thick. And the grass grew long and tall. These were the spears of grass that he mentions. It wasn't the grass that you see in a person's front yard that is low cut. This is wild grass. And rocks jutting out as well from the earth. But we came up to the top, and at that moment, I was completely alone. Sure, I had two friends with me, but they no longer existed in my mind. Because you come up to the top after such a strenuous climb, after such a long walk, and all you see is this, it's a scene of perfection. It is a scene of perfect chaos, you might say. There are a couple of low trees on top of this mountain, or there were. And then all these patches of grass, and then the trail that seemed to almost disappear at times. And that's whenever I truly understood, for the first time, what it was to be myself, in the sense that Whitman speaks, an individual. I was with two friends, but even their chatter together disappeared and faded out. And all you could really feel and sense the gravity of the situation, the gravity of the climb. You could feel it. And as we walked slowly towards the peak, because now it was a gradual incline instead of a sharp incline, as we were walking towards the peak, I think all three of us, each of us individually, had already felt as if we had accomplished this task. And more than likely, I think, because I talked to one of them later, each of us felt a sense of aloneness, but not the kind where it's not loneliness, but an aloneness in nature, a connection. And call it a mountain high, call it the whatever you want to call it, the thin air. But that was whenever this poem really became something meaningful to me, was whenever I experienced exactly what he was talking about in the beginning. And then later, of course, this was long before I really understood what an anarchist was. Well, in fact, before I started this podcast, I only had an inkling, and still do, but it's a much larger inkling than I did before. So let's move along in the poem. I'm skipping the second section because that's sort of a continuation of the first. And we'll start, well here, I'll just read part of the third section. I have heard what the talkers were talking, the talk of the beginning and the end. But I do not talk of the beginning or the end. There was never any more inception than there is now, nor any more youth or age than there is now, and will never be any more perfection than there is now, nor any more heaven or hell than there is now. Urge and urge and urge, always the procreant urge of the world. And in this he's talking about living in the moment. He's talking about never were you more youthful than you are at this very instant. Never were you more full of life than at this very instant. Because it's always marching towards an end. Time always marches towards an end. And there's always chaos in the future, too. That's another thing. I think that's what sparks the fear of any statist. They fear the anarchist because of that. Because there's always chaos, and they know it. And now they've got a demon to blame the chaos upon. They have the demon of anarchy. They have the monster in the closet, the monster under the bed, which is anarchy. And I don't think they use this tool out of ignorance. I don't think they use this fear out of ignorance. I think they use this fear, they being the state, or those in control. And I equalize those. Those two things are equal in my mind now. Before I started this podcast, the state was one thing, and corporations were something else. But now I understand they are the same. They are one and the same, in fact. There is no difference. When an individual or a group of individuals seeks to oppress or to hold down or to put in chains another individual, that is the same thing that is evil. It is the monster that we as anarchists fight against. And some people may think, well, we have to use something, some incorporation of humanity, some gathering of humanity that we call the state. They may say we need this to fight those that would oppress. But throughout history, you can see that such devices of man, as it were, such devices of generally the ruling elite, are eventually, if not immediately, turned against the people they are supposed to protect. Think of the United States. I think they probably lasted less than one president before the power of government was used against the people. George Washington himself used the military to murder citizens. Think the Whiskey Rebellion, think the Revolt of the Farmers. There's all kinds of different instances where he and all of the people that came after him, all of the men that came after him in the office of the president, abused the power until eventually the government evolved to what it is now in the U.S. The same is true think about Google. It all tends towards chaos. Think about Google. Whenever they started, their mission was simple. And maybe they had underlying evil, what we might call quote-unquote evil plans. But their mission was relatively simple. Then they grew to be one of the largest corporations in the world. probably one of the most powerful corporations in the world. Now, you almost don't have a choice but to have a some sort of an account with Google in order to do certain things in the United States. Same with Amazon. Same with all of them. I would even throw Apple in there. Though they control the world much less, I think, than Google or Amazon do. But these are not things that an anarchist should be concerned about these things, in a manner of speaking. But at the core, we should always go back to Whitman, I think. And we should go back to Song of Myself. And we should read through it and find a center. Find a center within ourselves, because that's what this whole poem is about. It is finding a center within yourself, finding peace within yourself, finding whatever it is that makes you you within yourself. You can use meditation, you can use whatever tools you have at your disposal, but in the end, it is about finding yourself. It is a song of yourself. And you don't have to worry about the author's intentions with this one, or with any of them for that matter, because you can take it and apply everything that he says to you. So now we'll skip again to number 5, section 5 of the poem. I believe in you, my soul. The other I am must not abase itself to you, and you must not be abased to the other. Loaf with me on the grass. Loose the stop from your throat. Not words, not music or rhyme I want, not custom or lecture, not even the best. Only the lull I like, the hum of your valved voice. I mind how once we lay such a transparent summer morning, how you settled your head athwart my hips and gently turned over upon me, and parted the shirt from my bosom bone, and plunged your tongue to my bare, stripped heart, and reached till you felt my beard, and reached till you held my feet. Swiftly arose and spread around me the peace and knowledge that pass all the argument of the earth. And I know that the hand of God is the promise of my own, and I know that the Spirit of God is the brother of my own, and that all other men, or that all the men ever born, are also my brothers, and the women my sisters and lovers, and that a kelson of the creation is love, and limitless are leaves stiff or drooping in the fields, and brown ants in the little wells beneath them, and mossy scabs of the worm fence, heaped stones, elder, mullein, and pokeweed, or mullein and pokeweed. And that was the whole section right there, or the whole chapter, or whatever you'll call it. That one took me a little longer to maybe understand. But let's just take the first stanza. I've been calling it phrase, but I think it's not phrase. I should know this. It is the first stanza. I believe in you, my soul. The other I am must not abase itself to you. And so on. He sees he is of two minds. Perhaps it is, what is it? Is it Plato that has the demons? I can't remember. Plato, Aristotle, and Socrates. I believe it's Aristotle, actually. Aristotle's demons. And this is immediately what came up in my mind, was the demons, or the demons of Aristotle or Socrates. Yeah, I really can't remember who it was. But the demons, that is the something within yourself that's apart from yourself. It is the urges, the desires. It is the needs, in fact. And they're separate. However, neither should abase themselves to the other, your mind or your demons. They should live in unity. And that's what Whitman speaks of here, is unity. Unity of the mind and soul. Some would call those demons the soul. The needs, the wants, the feelings, everything, the soul. They should not abase themselves to each other. They should be together in unity. And just as they are together, he extends that later on to all men and women of the earth. But he extends it further to God as himself, if you believe in God, or to the ultimate being, to the creator, to the ultimate power on earth. He is equal. And so are we. You are equal to the ultimate power of the universe. And this harkens back to a few episodes ago when we talked about perception. Or last episode, we talked about worldview some more. Because all you are is your perception. All you know is your perception. And it's the same for all of those around you. Your brothers, your sisters, your mothers, everyone. Everyone is the sum of their parts. Everyone is the sum of their perceptions. Because all we have is perception. If you read this book, or you listen to me, you perceive something about me. Maybe you perceive the nasally sound of my voice. Because I do. I hear it every time I listen back and edit this stuff. And maybe you perceive the beginning of an episode where it sounds like I'm just kind of getting into it. Maybe I'm not really warmed up. And then you move to the middle of the episode where I find the tempo of the episode, or I find whatever it is. And then, and this is, I assure you, none of this is on purpose. There's no real script to any of this. This is just me reading the book, thinking about it, maybe reading some essays, and then talking about it. But I have noticed, as I've recorded more and more, that I find pathways, and my mind just leads me down them, and all I have to do is open my mouth and let sounds come out. And eventually, I hit a beat, and it eventually climaxes to the ultimate point, hopefully, unless I get lost along the way, which seems to happen quite often. And then eventually it dies off, or it dies off suddenly and I say goodbye. But anyway, it's all about perception. That's how I perceive it. Maybe that's not how you perceive it. Maybe that's not how you perceive... So what I'm telling you about this book of poetry, it's all based on my own perception. That doesn't mean there is no truth. It simply means that I perceive it one way, and you may perceive it another. I perceive the state as the ultimate evil. Whitman may not. I'm not really sure. I perceive people who would oppress my abilities, or oppress my rights, or oppress whatever it is, oppress my privacy, and take it away, as one of the ultimate evils, one of the great devils of society. Because we can dehumanize a corporation all we want, but in the end, a corporation is made up of humans, of these people that Whitman calls his brothers. And you should not abase yourself to your brothers, nor should they abase themselves to you. No one, according to Whitman, can claim true superiority, at least if I'm perceiving this correctly, over another. And even if I'm not perceiving this correctly, I think that's true. I think that statement is true. I think if you look at someone with whom you have no association, say you live in Sweden or Finland, and there's someone in southern India, you don't know who they are. You don't even think about them because you don't perceive of their existence. But you're not going to abase them. You're not going to tear them down. Say you do find out about them and you see they do something silly that you would never do. You're not going to tear them down because you don't know them. It's the same whenever I lived in, in what you might call, I don't know what you would call it. It's the poorer part of town. What they call around here the wrong side of the track. I lived over there for 3 years, I think. 3 or 4 years before I finally got a job that I could get out of there. My neighbor cooked meth. My other neighbor didn't know what it was like to be off of heroin. But I didn't abase them. I didn't... Even then, I understood the value. I don't look at these people and say, just because they have something that I... Or they lack something that I perceive myself to not lack or be lacking in. They lack control or self-control. they lack an understanding of themselves, or they lack whatever it is. I don't see that as something, oh, wretched and something that must be driven out, because that's not what it is to my eye. And even then, this was before I really even began my journey into anarchism. Even then I understood that we're all humans. And maybe it was because I read Whitman at such a ripe young age, and he changed something in me. And then I experienced the out-of-doors. I experienced the top of a mountain. I experienced the smoke-laden hills, the smoke-laden knolls at the top of a mountain. I experienced the dark darkness of the low-hanging trees. I sat down amongst the trees alone. I picked the berries at the top of the mountain for sustenance. And I experienced something true. I experienced something real to me. And it was my perception that made it real. And it was my perception that made it true. And how what that has to do with the drug addict next door, or the meth cook, the person that cooks meth next door, is they also are experiencing something. And maybe it's a sort of hell. And I don't want to launch into that topic just now, because that's a whole nother can of worms. But suffice it to say that though I don't believe in some sort of hell that you go to because you were a bad boy growing up, or a bad girl before you died, I do believe that is a really good, that mythology, the mythology behind it, is a really good perception on the part of the Judeo-Christian and other religions, but that's the one I'm familiar with mostly. It is a really good perception on their part. They understand that the things you do that affect your life negatively, or the things that happen to you, can put you in something that is a hell. And it is a hell on earth, and you will live in that hell. And there's no way out. Or there appears to be no way out. The only way out is to be pulled out of it by someone else. And that's the story of Jesus right there. And I don't mean to be a preacher, but that's exactly what hell is in my mind, and to my perception. It is, you can, if I put myself in the shoes of my neighbors, I'm cooking meth. Why? Because I gotta smoke some of it, sell some of it, maybe break even, that'd be great, and collect my check, and talk about all the great things that I'm gonna do with the money that I'm going to make, and all the wonderful things that I can do with my life, but never achieve them. And that's a hell, isn't it? You tell your friends, or you tell the people who you think are your friends, all these great things you want to do, all these things you're good at. You sing of yourself, but instead of singing of yourself to yourself, you're singing of yourself to yourself and to others. And you're singing a song that isn't your own. You're singing a song of what you want yourself to be, and you're abasing your soul to your mind or to yourself. You're abasing others to you. You're making them look, or in your own mind at least, you're telling yourself the lie that they're worse off than you, that they're worse than you. And that's okay. So these are the lies you tell yourself, and then you end up living in hell in the end. And the anarchist should strive to do just the opposite, to do as Whitman says, and to sing of yourself to yourself. Do not abase yourself to yourself. Live in your life, live and understand that each moment is precious to you. Each moment is defining. Not just the moment where I climbed up and I reached the top of the mountain and I saw what I saw, and I felt what I felt, and I heard what I heard. Not those moments. Those moments are great. But the moments, every moment from the minute I stepped on that trail, was another moment that could define and shape my own perceptions and worldview. And I hate to really, you know, beat a dead horse by mentioning worldview again, but I think that's the entirety of what this is about what anarchy is about. It is realizing that we are all individuals, we all have a worldview, we all have a perception of our own, And we should never impose that upon another person. We should never abase another person and make them less than us. We should always make everyone around us equal to us, not better. Never better, never less, but equal. And I think that's what this whole poem is about. It's about what we talked about earlier, plus this, but it's all kind of the same trope. It's realizing, the song of myself is realizing yourself, understanding yourself, finding mindfulness. And that is something that I would urge you, dear listener, to maybe try. Try discovering mindfulness. Maybe it's through Buddhism, which has a lot of focus on mindfulness, or maybe it's through simply practicing some sort of meditation or self-knowledge, or finding self-knowledge. Writing about yourself, that's a good one. Writing about your past, your present, and your future. Writing entire essays, I've done that before. And maybe that's writing down the song of yourself. And tell it truthfully, from your perception. Tell it how it is, and then read it, because then by reading it, you are singing to yourself. I'm going to read one more little passage out of this. It is from section 9 of Song of Myself. The big doors of the country barn stand open and ready. The dried grass of the harvest time loads the slow-drawn wagon. The clear light plays on the brown, gray, and green intertinged. The armfuls are packed to the sagging mow. I am there. I help. I came stretched atop of the load. I felt its soft jolts. One leg reclined on the other. I jump from the crossbeams and seize the clover and timothy, and roll head over heels and tangle my hair full of wisps. I say it's from the ninth section. That was the entirety of the ninth section. That is also living in the moment. That is a scene from living in the moment. But also, if you've noticed, he planned ahead. So you make your plans and then you live out your plans and you are present of mind in those plans. And that trope continues on and on through this whole poem. And if you've read the whole thing, you know it is not what you think of whenever you think of a like a little poem. It's not a sonnet by any means. Though it's also not an epic poem either. Maybe the whole book could be called an epic. The Epic of Walt Whitman. But I think this poem really digs deep. Maybe this is what Emma Goldman saw in Whitman whenever she praised him so much. Maybe this is what Emma Goldman felt, perceived of Whitman. All of these things that we've talked about. Maybe, and it doesn't have to be that deep. This is just how I see it. This is how I, whenever I read this, this is what I knew. Through my perceptions. So I hope you enjoyed Leaves of Grass. I don't think we're going to cover any more of the poems. I was thinking about doing one more, but I really just wanted to get to Song of Myself. I hope you read the whole thing. I hope you read all of them. I did. I read them all, and then I came back and read this before I started recording. But truthfully, I think I can see the attraction. But see, that's the thing. It's a human attraction. If we keep separating anarchists from the rest of humanity, then I think we miss the whole point of anarchism. So if you keep separating, well, I'm an anarchist. Well, no, you're a human. Yes, but I don't like the government. Well, of course not. If you're an individual, of course you wouldn't like a collective body telling you what to do on pain of death. Especially the quibbly things, the little things. You can't, like in Kentucky, there is a law that says it is against the law to have an ice cream cone in your pocket. It doesn't actually even say if it has to have ice cream in it or not. I think it's a silly law, but laws like that kind of demonstrate, okay, so I can't have an ice cream cone in my pocket. Well, that sucks. What happens if I do? Well, probably nothing. But say a police officer wanted to get you for something, and you just happen to have the habit of carrying around ice cream cones in your pockets. He could take you down for that law, and then search you and find something else that he can really pin on you. Maybe you had a little bit of weed in your car, and he searches the car and he finds weed. Any number of things. These laws, even the silly ones, the little ones, the ones we don't seem to care about, even those can be used against us to hold us down and remind us of our place. Remind us that we are subjugated to the law. Subjugated to subjugated to another human. And it's not, as they say, well, this is for the good of society. And a lot of anarchists I've met will say, well, yeah, well, right now it is, but, you know, in the future. But no, it's not. If you have to use violence to get anything, if you have to use the threat of death to get what you want, I honestly cannot understand how that is for the good of society. Because that's what the government is. It is the threat of death. It is the threat of violence, the threat of imprisonment, the threat of a life torn apart and ruined. For what? So that whoever's in power can get what they want. And it's the same with corporations. Well, you have to have a Google account to use that phone. I don't want a Google account. Well, then you can't use that phone. Okay, I'll get a different phone. Well, you have to have an Apple account to use that phone. I don't want another account. I don't need anyone. I don't want to give away my information. Ah, well, I'm sorry, but you can't have that phone. What other phone is there? I was talking about smartphones. Well, now we have some Linux phones, and that's a great advancement on the part of the of free software and Linux. But the fact still remains that Apple and Google control the market and effectively control your individual choice and your individual abilities, at least in the U.S. Maybe it's not so in all the other countries, but I fear that it may be. So we are an anarchist if we want to go against the powers that be. And that's really all there is to it. You're still a human, and that's all you are. An anarchist is just a label, in my mind, to my perception, is a label to identify that I'm not content to be ruled. Doesn't mean, at least in my part, it doesn't mean I'm going to raise up arms against whoever decides to hold me down. Not literally, but at the same time, because I'm not much on violence. But at the same time, it is a use of violence and force for anyone to hold you down in ways that you may not even know. And these are some of the thoughts that come through my head in the conclusion of this episode. Because Whitman really, just reading it again, reading his collection of poetry again, has really gotten me thinking again about what is really valuable whenever it comes right down to it. I think maybe you guys should think about that as well. Maybe, and maybe this is an exercise we can all partake in. We'll sit down and you'll just pick one of the poems at random and you just meditate on the poem. And by meditate, of course, you don't have to sit cross-legged and hum to yourself. But sit down and read the poem and really just read it line by line and really be there. Try to be there in the moment. Try to be block everything out. And just read the words and think about them, because I think there are real nuggets of wisdom in all that he has written, all of the poetry and everything. So I think that'll be my final word, because I can just keep talking if I wanted, if I didn't stop myself. So I hope you guys enjoyed this episode. If you did, tell me, or if you didn't, go ahead and shoot me a message on Mastodon. Or you can send me a email at anarchobookclub@riseup.net. Otherwise, you can just go to the website, find all the links in the contact, and just tell me what you think. So I hope you guys enjoyed, and thanks for listening.